It is Friday, 2 o'clock. That's why you hear this music. It's what we do every Friday at 2 here with Bob Gross and Tom. We bring in the professor, John Clayton, for a conversation. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing well. Doing well. I'm ready for the resumption of the Mariner season. Excited to have baseball back. But we're talking football here. And Gross and I were talking about this earlier. I'm not sure if the NFL could have screwed up this anthem thing any worse than they have.
Oh, I'm sure they can.
I mean, you think? It's been pretty good screw up.
You can see that the I think the one would have been the worst. I'm trying to remember the one that was so silly that they were actually thinking about doing. I think they were almost thinking about implementing automatic suspension. Oh, it was. I think it was going to be suspensions. Automatic suspensions if you do that. And so, no, it's bad. I mean, but you could tell at the owners' meeting, as soon as we heard that, it was like, what are we talking about here? This is so dumb, because what it did is like, oh, instead of having one decision, you'd have 32 decisions. And there was no guidance on what they did. Now, remember, they didn't even vote on it. They just implemented it and basically kind of threw it to the teams. Hey, you guys figure out what to do. So here's the Dolphins, and they don't know what they're doing. And so what they do is that, as every team has to do, you have to notify your players if there's going to be any defined systems. And so they put out the 9-page document. And, of course, in there it has the suspensions. I mean, they has 4-game possible suspension because the anthem is under player conduct. Now, player conduct for teams is 4 games, where it's 6 games if it's the league. And so the team is going to get fined if the player does something. And then the team has the ability to anything up to 4-game suspension. The good part is that was so messed up once that came out that it got the league thinking, oh, maybe we should talk to the players. So they started their conversations just recently. They got to the point where they're saying, okay, let's put the implementation of this on the side until maybe, just maybe, we can figure something out. But no, it's a mess.
Well, and then we saw what the Dolphins did, where they had a 4-game suspension in their policy, and a tremendous amount of blowback comes their way. And they said, "Whoa, no. That was a placeholder. We just put that in there. We didn't settle on anything."
Well, I believe that.
Why would they put a 4-game as a placeholder? You could have said 1 game. You could have said 2 games.
Remember, I mean, this is a business, and you have to have guidelines on whether you're going to do something like that. And so what they did, they put it under the category of player conduct. And that, because you have to say, okay, what is this? Is this some bad thing or whatever? But they put it, by putting it under player conduct, that now says, okay, we can fine you up to 4 games and suspend you for 4 games. It didn't really spell out what the real policy was, but you needed to put some document in that you can get to the players so they have an idea if something goes wrong. Oh, I can look at this and say, okay, I'm going to fight this way. But by putting it under player conduct, they weren't saying they would suspend them for 4 games, but that would put them in the possibility of suspending them for 4 games, which would have been absolutely ridiculous.
So what's the next step?
Well, and here's a weird one, and I just throw this out because players, I think, have a pretty strong position in this, because unlike the NBA, the NBA worked it out with the players. I don't know how active they were, but at least they have it in the CBA that if you don't stand for the anthem, you get suspended, because they did that, for Chris Jackson, I think, for 1 game. And so what the NFL did is they decide, oh, we're going to have the players out there because some of the teams are going to get money from the military. And so we'll put them out there. But they didn't think through if there were any problems. And so now you can see where the problems are, and they don't know how to fix it. The players then can make a trade out to see, OK, if you give us this, we'll take care of you on the anthem. So, I mean, and this is maybe a silly one, but I just throw it out. This is an idea. Okay, so let's say that they say, well, tell you what. We believe that we don't want marijuana testing, or we can minimize the testing of marijuana. And so if you give us that, we'll stand for the anthem. And, that would be medical marijuana. Just to loosen up the testing for marijuana, because that's an issue the players, are actively seeking. And so if they do that, maybe there can be the trade-off that's like, okay, then we'll all be there for the anthem. And, the only time that they would do any suspensions for marijuana would be if you get arrested in a state where it's illegal and you have a case that goes against you. That one, I think that they'd have to comply with. But I don't know. Is that an idea that could solve this?
I suppose.
I'm not saying.
The reason why I don't think that works, John, is you're asking players to give up a civil right, the right to protest.
Right.
I think the only thing that's going to work in this circumstance is if you take it out of there. Like we talked about way at the beginning, go back to the policy that you had from 2009 to beforehand.
Before they were being paid?
Yeah, before the league was making a pittance compared to what the league makes, $8 billion a year. This is a $10 million a year, $13 million a year deal they have with the military. Don't have the players out there, period, for the anthem. It's how it used to be. It would make the story go away. You don't have to have anyone do anything. You don't have to make any concessions to anyone about anything. And it's also, it's something that, it's the way you've done it beforehand. I just don't see a way where the NFL is going to negotiate away their ability to protest.
I agree 100%. I mean, it's an easy solution, and it doesn't seem like they want to accept the solution because you just take it off the plate. I mean, there's no more controversy because you can say, oh, yeah, but they're taking away the ability to do this and this and this. No, it gets it out of the main topics. It gets it on football. I saw a tweet from some Tennessee Titan fan saying, hey, I bought a ticket for my son to go to this game. I'm not going to go because of this. I mean, people are upset about this, and I think everybody realizes, just take this off the plate.
Yes.
That's easy to
do.
Why
don't they realize it?
I think that they feel, well, geez, and then we're going to be conceding something. Well, listen, they're not, under these circumstances, there is not one thing NFL owners can do to fix this that isn't going to cause controversy. The least amount of controversy is taking it off the plate, having the players in the locker room, as they do in college football, as they did before 2009, and then you have no more worries about this. It's done.
Mm. Hey, moving on to other things, the Atlanta Falcons have said, Julio, we're not going to give you a new deal. He's got 3 years left on his deal, which is, it's interesting, John, because typically you hear these complaints about contracts when you're approaching the final year, you're in the final year. I don't recall hearing it very often when you've had that much time left on a deal, maybe outside of Michael Bennett.
Yeah, but that happens a bunch of times. I mean, you go back, and sometimes what happens is you go for the longer deals as a trade-off. I'll give you the Antonio Brown situation, and I was actually there the day that he signed the deal. Antonio Brown was the number two receiver then of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had Mike Wallace, who they were offering $10 million a year, and Wallace had turned them down. Drew Rosenhaus flew in and signed a six-year deal that was in the $8-plus million range. Now, Antonio Brown was like a sixth-round pick that was on the rise, but you didn't know he was going to be the best receiver in football for several years. And so after a couple years, after he established himself, he was saying, hey, I want to renegotiate my contract. And this is like in the second or third year. And he goes, you can't. That's why we gave you 6 years, and we took the chance and bumped up the average to $8 million. So what they did for about two or three years until we got to the last year, they just moved money up from the end of the contract to the front. They really didn't increase his average. And so then he got his deal. What the Falcons have done, because remember, they've got to get something done with Grady Jarrett, their defensive tackle, Vic Beasley, the defensive end, their left tackle, Jake Matthews, is say, listen, we'll get to you next year. That'll have 2 years left in the contract. Stay with us and come into camp, but we're not doing anything this year. So they did say nothing this year, but we'll consider something next year.
Is Dez Bryant going to play football this year?
I think so.
Where?
Hard to tell. I mean, right now, I think he's going to have to wait into camp to see, one, if San Francisco or Tennessee has interest. If not, then he might just have to wait for an injury. Now, the first injury, you know he's going to get the call. It may be a team that he may not want to go to, but I can see, the injury opening up the opportunity because he's just too, he's the best, one of the best players on the street. Again, you still have to include Colin Kaepernick, but, he's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But Dez Bryant is the best offensive player out there who's not named Colin Kaepernick. So he's not a number not a number one, I think, anymore. He's lost some speed, but I think he's a good number two. And, in an open market, if this was the beginning of free agency, he probably would have gotten, 7 to 8 million a year. Now, unfortunately, he's going to probably have to take 1 or 2 million on a one-year deal.
John, should the NFL invite Terrell Owens to future Hall of Fame get-togethers?
No, they should not.
Why not?
What's that?
Why not?
Well, you didn't even have to think about that one.
Well,
John.
No, I don't know about the NFL, but I'm talking about the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
That's which is talking about, the Pro
separate
Football
entity.
Yeah, no, they should not. Because, he's the one that elected not to come. And so
if he says, I made a mistake and I should have come.
Yes, they should then they should take him back and, pay for his way to come there.
So he's got to apologize.
Yes. Well, yeah, he basically has to fess up and say, listen, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this. And it's like they'll open their arms and have him come in. But until he does that, I mean, how can you let him back in? I think
invite him. Just say, come on back.
What's that?
Just say, well, he's a Hall of Famer, so he gets to go, like every other Hall of Famer does.
Well, but he's a different Hall of Famer. He's the only Hall of Famer that elected not to go.
But how does that affect him being in the Hall of Fame or anything like
nothing.
That?
Well, no, but he's the
nothing to do with what he did on the field. Nothing to do with him earning his bust. He's got a bust in Canton,
right? And he's allowed to see it at any time. I mean, you know, he'll have to.
No, he's not. He's not allowed to go to. You just said there's a time he's not allowed.
Oh no, he's not. It's not that he's not allowed. It's just that you know, he then has to say, "Hey, I want to come." And when he says, "I want to come to the Hall of Fame," they'll embrace him and let him come in. But he's got to be the one to say that.
He's got to make the first move.
He's got to make the move. Because remember, he's the only player in the history of the Hall of Fame to do something like this.
What if other players start doing it?
And they'll be in the same boat. But I can't imagine.
You're just going to ban everyone?
Well, no, they're not banning him. They're just not inviting him. I mean, remember, no other player has even thought about this. Oh, maybe thought about it. But Harry Carson was the one that I still remember, like 3 years into his 7-year run to get into the Hall of Fame. He's saying, if I get enshrined, I'm not going. And we didn't care. It's like, hey, if we're going to vote you in as we wish, and we voted him in, and now I can tell you they have a luncheon every Friday where they have all the Hall of Famers in, and they all speak. And, you know, Kerry Carson's one of the ones that speaks the most about how appreciative he is to being in the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is a great moment because, one, you celebrate your career. You can say anything you want to do. You can take care of all the people that took care of you during your career. I mean, it's a great opportunity. And again, he's the only one that after being elected that's healthy enough to be there that didn't go.
So because he wants to celebrate his induction to the Hall of Fame differently, he should be banned.
I mean, it's like, but until he decides that he wants to be there, why invite him? It's like if you invited me to a party and I, you know, say, I don't ever want to come to that party. Well, it's like, well, okay, don't come, and I'm not going to invite you the next year. But it's like, hey, Graz, I'm sorry. I screwed up. I should have come. And it's like, okay, then. Come on down.
I didn't invite you the second time.
What's that?
I didn't invite you the second time.
Would you? Oh, I appreciate that.
Hey, John, Jameis Winston's looking for a new agent out there. It looks like is Roc Nation going to pick him up? Is he a guy that agencies are very interested in, or do they look at him as damaged goods because of his off-the-field exploits? How is he viewed?
Well, he's viewed right now as damaged goods, but that hasn't stopped the top agents in the business from wanting him. I mean, he's got CAA after him. I know that Joel Siegel is after him. I know that David Dunn is after him. You know, all the agents who represent quarterbacks or have represented top players are all after him. So even though he's damaged goods right now, I mean, he's still in demand. I mean, he's a talented quarterback that is going to make $20 million on the option year unless they decide to pull the option year. And if they pull the option, then he's a free agent. So, no, he's very much in demand by agents because he's still a marketable type of player, even though this 3-game suspension hurt him.
Any latest on Earl Thomas's situation?
No. I mean, I was thinking about this because what I did is I was going through, because particularly remember when this week USA Today came out and put the Seahawks as a 4-12 team.
Right.
And I was like, okay, come on.
What are the people doing? Is that just a clickbait or what is that?
Well, see, what it is, it's not studying the team close enough. Now, we're here, so we see this. So what I ended up doing is that, and I'd done this before, but I did it in even more detail. One, I looked at the last 7 games. Now, remember, they didn't it's not as if they're waking up today and they didn't have Richard Sherman, Cliff Averill, or Cam Chancellor. They didn't have them the 7 games last year. So what do we see? Now, remember, they still have the same starting cornerbacks that they finished with after those 7 games, Byron Maxwell and Shaquille Griffin. They still had Bradley McDougal as the safety. What they didn't have was Sheldon Richardson, Michael Bennett, and Michael Wilhoit didn't have those. And so and of course Earl Thomas is still out there, and I'll get back to the Earl Thomas thing in a second. So when you start to go through that, how did they do? Well, they were in the last 7 games, they were second in the league for the fewest yards allowed. They allowed 61.3% completion, which was pretty good. They allowed less than 200 yards a game passing. So it's like you've already seen a little of what they are. Now, I went back to 2011. That's remember when Marcus Trufant gets hurt. They have that same stretch, and now they're out there with the Legion of Boom. But 3 of the guys were in their rookie years. And so they had better numbers because, it was one of the greatest secondaries in the history of the league. But, the drop-off is not as dramatic as people are thinking. And the reason you can say that, or at least I say that, is I looked at the numbers because for 7 games last year, they were respectable. Yeah, they had the bad game against the Rams, but also they were playing great teams. They were playing Philadelphia. They were playing a Jacksonville team. You know, they were playing a tough closing schedule, and they did respectable. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles. So they played Atlanta in that stretch. So what I look at is that they already have the beginnings of what's there, and now they've had the offseason to see if they can add some things to the mix. So, yeah, without Sheldon Richardson, you know, that's going to be a loss, and without Michael Bennett. But also, you see Frank Clark. I am probably wrongly saying Frank Clark goes from being a number three to a number one, but he started 12 games last year. He had 7 sacks in those 12 starts, so he was a number two. Now he advances to being a number one. So that's why I don't think the drop-off is going to be as bad as people think, and they still have Russell Wilson, and name me how many teams that have top five quarterbacks that don't win 8 games. Rare.
I'm with you, John. I've been saying I still think this is a double-digit win team. I think they were a few kicks away from being an 11 or 12-win team last year. And again, as you point out, and I pointed out the same thing, they were without these guys, some of them, for a majority of the season. So I'm not sure why everybody is underselling them. I'm not saying they're as good as they've been in years past, but to say this is a 4-win team, you look highly uneducated.
Right.
To say something like that with a straight face.
Well, just
face.
Like I know, and again, Nate Davis, I think, does a good job for USA Today. I mean, he's the one that did a great research thing about the best secondaries in the history of the league, and I think he nailed it. I mean, he had the Legion of Boom number one, the Pittsburgh Steeler group number two, and you look at the order, and it was pretty respectable. But in this one, I mean, he has Andrew Luck going 2-14. Andrew Luck, when he's out there playing, has never been worse than 8-8. Never. I mean, and that's with some bad teams. And so his return should get them to 8-8, just like having Russell Wilson should have this team being better than 8-8.
It's the 23rd birthday for Shaquem and Shaquille Griffin today. What is Shaquem Griffin's potential role on this team?
Special teams to start out, and I think grooming to see within a year whether he can be a starting linebacker. I mean, see how he first tackles and see how good he can pick things up. You know, they you know, it's a one-year situation with Barkevious Mingo. So, I mean, if that doesn't work out, then, you know, they can go a different direction. But it's kind of a tryout. But I think they're kind of building him for the future. But then, you know, this still goes back to 2011. I mean, if he's good enough, and at some point he may emerge as a starter, and an injury may give him the opportunity to start. I mean, linebacker, I think, is one of their thinnest positions. So, you know, one or two injuries gets him on the field as a linebacker because, you know, you have a choice. You're going to go with DJ Alexander, or you're going to go with Griffin. If Griffin can pick things up, you know, he'll get a chance to play sooner. But I think you start him out slow with special teams and then see where it goes. But injuries will happen, and that may give him a chance to play.
In terms of dealing with his handicap, where is that most likely to cause him problems?
It didn't show in college, that's for sure.
It sure didn't.
Did not. I mean, you know, he's got amazing speed. I mean, he was one of the fastest linebackers at the Combine in years. I mean, he's got incredible tackling ability. I think his senses are real good. And so, I mean, I guess the only downside... Shedding blocks. But again, that was always a thing that I heard that drove me crazy because it's almost like, you know, hearing the Seahawks at 4-12. Well, you know, Derek Johnson, the former Kansas City Chief linebacker, is not good at shedding blocks. Brian Urlacher is not good at shedding blocks. No, the idea is not to be wrapped up by an offensive lineman. The idea is to run around that offensive lineman and the blocker and tackle the guy. Because, you know, you have quick linebackers that aren't guys that, you know, necessarily are great on when they're being blocked. But if you're elusive enough, as some of the great linebackers are, Derek Johnson being one of the most recent, who cares? And I think that, you know, he can be very elusive and just go for the tackles.
Looks like Bill Belichick's a popular topic for former players out there. You got James Harrison talking about, you know, who he prefers, Belichick over Tomlin. You had Danny Amendola out there talking about playing for Gase versus Belichick. And, you know, is this just them responding to media? Is it getting out from under his thumb and feeling the freedom to say these things? How do you view the comments?
No, it's interesting. Like in James Harrison, I'm sure Mike Tomlin wasn't happy about this, but I mean, Mike Tomlin can't say he's as good as Bill Belichick. I mean, Bill Belichick now is starting to go down as the greatest coach in the history of this league.
I was going to say, who can say there?
Yeah, it's like he can't say it now, unfortunately, because he's not around, but Vince Lombardi, but he's not with us anymore. And, Belichick is probably going to be considered the best ever. So it's like everybody has to finish behind him, and that's not an area of of disrespect. But I think what it still comes down to is that there's more comments now about playing for Bill Belichick because it's not the most fun experience. I mean, he works you hard. He is not great communicating if he's making changes that may affect you negatively. But what he does, he gives every player that he puts on the field the best ability to do as well as they can. I mean, look how honest I think James Harrison was. He says, they don't have a lot of great players on defense. And so they keep winning Super Bowls and getting back to Super Bowls and staying ahead of Pittsburgh. And it's like, well, maybe what it is Bill Belichick's a better coach than Mike Tomlin. Well, yes, he is.
By the way, quickly on Andrew Luck, he is good to go. No limitations is what the story says. And he's going to throw the Duke, John.
He's doing more than playing catch?
He's throwing the Duke. He's not on a mound yet. He's throwing from a flat surface. But no limitations, so we're to believe he's fixed. He's going to be okay?
I think he is. I really do. I think he's going to get that team up to 8 wins. I mean, he always has when he's come back. Now, this is the toughest injury, and what you're looking at, what you hope you're not looking at, is a repeat of the Jim Plunkett situation, because you remember how beat up Jim Plunkett was when he was with the New England Patriots, and it really took his body about 2 years once he went to Oakland to start feeling better. And so this may be a year where that body is, well, of course, the year off may have helped, but I think he's going to be fine.
Hey, John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, indeed, from 9 until 12.
Talk to you at 10.
Thank you.
There you go. John Clayton with us every Friday at 2 o'clock, and you can hear him tomorrow from 9 to noon. Meanwhile, Danny and Jim apparently were talking Mariners and talking Mariner untouchables yesterday.
Oh, yeah. If I heard this right, you're going to be full of righteous rage just like me.
Righteous rage.
If I heard what I thought, what I was told that was said.
Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, you're going to be angry.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm girding my loins now.
Gird away, buddy.
We're going to eavesdrop on that next with Bob Gross and Tom. I'm ready for righteous rage, Gross.
Well, if what was reported to me earlier by John Clayton was true.
Reported by John Clayton.
You'll have it.
Well, this is where we take a listen to things that people say at times, and at times maybe it will cause righteous rage. And this is our very own Danny David Moore talking about Mariners. And I guess they got into the conversation of Mariner untouchables when it comes to trades.
A natural conversation because it's trading deadline time. Although, as we've pointed out many times, I think on this show, that the idea of the trade deadline deals is to add to your team.
Yes.
Not to make an even trade, but to trade minor leaguers to get better.
Yes.
To keep what has gotten you there and add to what's gotten you there.
Exactly right. That would seem the obvious goal.
Okay.
Here's Danny on why he would listen to a Haniger trade.
If somebody has more of a value on Mitch Haniger than I think he's worth, or they have a player that I think is more valuable than Mitch Haniger, and I don't think Chris Archer is the right one, but it made me think, if Blake Snell, the Rays pitcher that just pitched in the All-Star game who's from Shoreline, if he was available for Mitch Haniger, I'd do that in an absolute second.
In an absolute second?
Yes. I wouldn't
even
think twice about it.
Even off of what Haniger's done?
Yes. Value of starting pitching, the fact that you would be getting as much or more. Like, there's the cost incentives to getting Snell are even better than to getting Chris Archer. I don't think you trade him for Chris Archer. But I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand.
Dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah, I like Blake Snell a lot. He's a local guy, which I've told you in the past, I don't really care. It'd just be a nice thing. That's not going to make me want to trade for somebody more. But he's a very good pitcher this year. He is.
This year. He's never had a winning season before this year. It's in his third season. He's having a very good year. You're talking about an all-star outfielder.
Yes.
Who's having an all-star season.
Yes.
Because he was in the all-star game.
Yes.
You have salary control over.
Right.
You got to trade a position player for a starter who's having his first great season? Are you insane?
Yeah, I've always had that feeling. We've had this debate, you and I and Tom when he's here, just about the impact of an everyday player who gives you something defensively, which we've seen with the outfield assists, the number that Haniger has this year, the way he plays in the field, and what he does at the plate. He's about as close as a five-tool player as you've got on this roster. So somebody who can impact the game on both sides every single day versus somebody who does it every fifth day. I'm not trying to – Blake Snell, I would love to see him in a Mariner uniform.
Nothing against Blake Snell. But look, I mean, it's also – it's about contract. And if Mitch Haniger, for example, was in his free agent year, so he was going to be a free agent next year.
Okay.
And you weren't sure that maybe you wanted to keep him for whatever crazy reason that might be. Okay, Mitch Haniger is not even arbitration eligible for 2 years. He's not eligible for free agency for 5 years. He is one of the most valuable commodities you could possibly have. An all-star, everyday player in the outfield, mm-hmm. who you control for 5 years contract-wise. You're not trading him for anyone, ever.
Unless we're talking Trout.
Unless he falls apart, he's literally the most valuable commodity in baseball. An everyday player who's a young guy who's already playing at an all-star level, you have contract control over for 5 years.
And gives you basically everything. Like I said, about as close assuming that he continues
to play at that level.
Right. You expect him to keep ascending. I mean, he's a young, he's 27, Snell's 25.
Snell's a terrific player, but Trout is the only guy maybe you're looking at. And again, you'd have to pay him a whole lot more than you'd have to pay Mitch Haniger. I mean, in this day and age in baseball, I think I can speak for Jerry DePoto on this. Having a player like Mitch Haniger, who is an all-star player who you have contract control over for 5 years, is the most valuable commodity you have. You're not trading him for a pitcher.
Yeah, I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I like Snell a lot, and this is not commentary on him. But first of all, pitchers come with a huge risk, any of them. When you sign a big-time contract with a pitcher, you're running a massive risk because they're more injury-prone than any other player on that field because of what they do. I'm looking at prospects. I'm not looking at eliminating a productive, everyday piece of this team that you're building around.
One of the key pieces to get you to this point is not a guy that you want to trade. Deadline deal in particular.
Right.
Now, if you're talking about the offseason and redoing your team and you got a chance to retool, that's a whole different conversation. What we're talking about is a deadline deal.
Yep.
For 6 weeks or 8 weeks
of
baseball.
Not doing it.
You're not trading the guys who got you here. You're trading prospects to add to the list. And you're never trading a guy like Haniger because of his contract status.
Here's Danny talking about why the Mariners should make a move.
I tend to side with the fact that they've played themselves into great position. I don't think they'll win at the same clip they've won at if they don't make changes. That I think that as currently constituted, they're not going to play at the same winning percentage over the final 65 games that they did over the first almost 100 games. But that really doesn't matter because they don't have to give back any of the wins. And they've played themselves into consideration and into contention, and they're in position to make moves to make this team better. And I think that's why I'm really excited and even itching for them to make deals.
That's fair. Make a deal.
I agree with every word of that.
But you're not eliminating somebody that's been that productive and that responsible for where you're currently sitting.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
You don't have to. No,
so I'm with them there.
I completely agree with them there. It's very unlikely they're going to play at the same level that they played at. And I do expect them to make some moves. And hopefully they can add something significant to the team. But you never know what significant is.
Right.
I mean, you never know what. I mean, in fact, having a really clutch middle reliever would be of a lot of value to this team.
And then finally, Jim and Danny give a rundown of who they consider untouchable on this roster.
I would say Haniger's an untouchable, Paxton, Diaz, and that's probably all I'd say at this point.
I wouldn't trade Paxton, but that's largely because I don't think another team, because of his injury history, would value him more than he's important to that team. He's the ace. And he's shown, and I know enough about James Paxton's personality that I want to bet on him. But it's not that I wouldn't trade James Paxton because I'm like, oh my gosh, he's good.
So you have no untouchables?
No.
I guess there isn't, depending on who you're talking about, right? There's the extreme cases, which aren't realistic. We keep bringing up Trout. That's not realistic. That's not happening. But in that case, okay, yeah, anybody's on the table in that situation.
Only in a make-believe scenario.
Exactly right. So technically, right, there are no untouchables. But outside of something along those lines,
you're not trading
I'm not
trading the guys who got you here.
Yeah, I'm not looking to trade Segura.
I'm not looking to trade any of them.
Diaz. I'd trade Kyle.
Well, we disagree on that. I would not trade Kyle Seager. I would not trade anyone. Look, for a deadline deal, which there's no guarantee that's going to help you, no matter who it is, and vis-a-vis John Lester 2014 A's,
mm-hmm.
there's no guarantee it's going to help you.
Right.
The whole point of a deadline deal is to try and add to your team,
not to take anything away. For the run you're making that
And you
year.
Trade minor leaguers.
Yes.
That's it. So unless it's a player for player deal, a position for position deal.
Right. If you get a very good third baseman in return and something,
then that's a different story.
Yeah.
Then that's a different story. But the odds of getting that and a deadline circumstance are crazy.
Yeah. But doesn't just happen. In terms of established Mariners, there are very few I'd be willing. And listen, I'm not giving Kyle Seager away either. He's having his best defensive year. Yeah, he struggled at the plate. We've seen that he's better than what he's been this year at the plate.
The untouchable question is a better question for the offseason. That's when you got a chance to put a lot of deals together and you can have a plan.
Who would be untouchable for you in that setting?
Well, Haniger is the top of that list.
Okay.
I would have to look at the rest of the roster in terms of contract. I would say Diaz, who you've also got under control, I think, for about three more years.
You just signed Segura.
Would be on that list. I mean, it would take an awful lot.
Mm-hmm. Paxton.
Right? I kind of agree with what Danny said, that Paxton's got a unique value to the Mariners.
Right.
That I don't think it's worth, I don't think you get the value for him that you'd want. I mean, anyone else, you might be willing to listen to offers, but it would have to be a part of a general plan. And look, if they go on and play at the pace that they played at, which is 97 wins at the end of the season, you got a chance to bring back most of this team for another run at it. I think that you probably would.
You'd trade.
I'd certainly trade Robinson Cano.
Yeah, but he's an incredibly productive guy. You've got five more years.
He's a very productive guy.
And you're anticipating a steep decline probably toward the end of this thing, but right now he's incredibly productive and you need him.
You do. But you need the bat.
It obviously would free up a ton of salary if a team were interested.
For deadline deals, though, stick with low minor prospects.
All right, time for the big payoff. Again, today's winner receives a soft pack 30 cooler, thanks to Arctic Coolers, premium coolers that keep your ice cold up to 10 days. They're not available in stores, only at RTICCoolers.com. Plus, you'll win 4 tickets to the Good Guys 31st Pacific Northwest Nationals, presented by Griot's Garage, July 27th through the 29th at the Washington State Fair Event Center in Puyallup. You can buy tickets at good-guys.com. Today's big payoff question is...
Well, first of all, I just have to say those coolers are pretty sweet. I'm not going to lie.
I know. You wanted Tom.
I really wanted Tom's.
And he said, and he went, ah, no.
And it didn't help that it was Carolina Blue. Really wanted that thing. Okay, the question. What food did Gras suggest that Bob and myself should try?
Mm. Oh, good one.
Good one.
If you know the answer to that.
You'd love it. You guys would both love it, too.
I'm skeptical, but I'll try it.
I guarantee you'd love
it. We're both willing to try it, Gras. We're both open-minded.
Okay.
If you know the answer, 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776. We come back with our winner, and we sum it all up next with Bob, Gras, and Tom.
It's time to sum it up with Bob, Gras, and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 245.
We got a winner, Gras. Somebody wins a cooler. They win tickets to the Pacific Northwest Nationals. Who's our winner?
Debbie from
Sammamish. Someone from Sammamish. That's right. Debbie from Sammamish.
There you go. Congrats, Debbie.
Kudos.
Kudos. Enjoy the cooler that Ashley doesn't have. She's very upset about
that. Man, I want that cooler. You guys have no idea.
Where would you... Are you a camper? Are you out there a lot? Where you need a cooler, or you just want to have a big baby blue cooler in your place?
It would look so great in the back of my pickup truck. You guys have no idea.
Are you really not a camper?
I
mean, if you had the time, would you be?
Yeah, if I had the time,
okay,
I would.
Okay. So
it's baseball season.
I understand that. So you are a camper. You're just not camping right now because you don't have time right now.
Well, yeah, I never have time for anything, so.
Okay. But you're not opposed to it.
Oh, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Like, okay. Bob and I consider us opposed to it.
Yeah.
Never doing it.
Oh, if I had an off weekend and a group of friends were like, hey, let's go camping, I would be the first to raise my hand.
I'd be like, nah, that's okay.
Boo.
I'd be, let's do some urban camping.
No,
I'd be right there with you.
Some hotel, where's your sense of adventure?
I've got a sense of adventure, but roughing it for me is black and white TV in the hotel room.
Would you say black and white TV?
A black and white TV in the hotel room.
Those still exist?
No, I don't think they do.
Black and white TV.
I don't think they do.
All right. Well, congrats to our winner. By the way, did we get a programming note? Danny Davenport, they're not going to have Scott Service now?
According to producer Jessamyn McIntyre, yes. They're not having Scott Service now.
All right. That's a bummer.
We had him on earlier at his press conference.
Yeah, you got a little taste of his joy.
And you know what? I'm gonna make a wild speculation here.
All right.
A deal is coming.
A deal is coming for a new
something. And Service has been... Needs to be at the Poto's side.
Hmm.
Just
that'd be nice.
Just speculating. I mean, otherwise, I think he'd
be a good reason.
That would be a logical reason.
Maybe he's giving Vogie a talking to. Like, listen, kid, this is your last time here. This is the last time we're doing this. We're giving you a lot of opportunity.
Oh, come on now.
I need to see some production.
Does that even resemble Scott Servais?
No. It's just more of a hope. I don't know what it's going to take to get him to be. Maybe he's just not a major league player. I don't know. I want him to be good.
Well, I want to say that it's definitely, I mean, the Mariners are beginning the second half or the last half, the sprint to the finish, on a real positive note by extending Scott Servais, which we talked about earlier today, and having Jerry DePoto locked up. It is the first time the Mariners have extended a manager since Lou Piniella, which is unbelievable to me. Lou Piniella last managed here 15 years ago.
It's been longer than that, isn't it?
Well, 2002, I think, was his last year here. Yeah, so it's been
16 years.
16 years, yeah, this year.
That's even sooner than that. I thought it was even earlier than that, but okay.
But they are now set in the front office, and it gives them a little bit of positive momentum, let's say, for this weekend series with the White Sox and moving on to the second half. It's going to be a fascinating second half. The Mariners kind of control their own destiny. Well, not kind of. They do control their own destiny. And with the wild card race being what it is, with the Mariners and the A's right now being the only two teams involved, with the Angels maybe involved, it also means the Mariners will control their destiny in terms of their playoff positioning. They've got 9 left with Houston, 10 left with the A's. So division games are going to be much more important than other games. Through this, I mean, that's 19 of their 65 games left are against their two primary contenders for the wild card. Plus about 10 of them left with the Texas Rangers, too.
Yeah, and they've got a handful with the Angels, all in Anaheim.
Good news, yeah.
Yeah, so
six left with the Angels.
They're getting a big dose of the Astros right out of the gate in their second half schedule. Their final 65 games. I mean, you start out with the White Sox, you've got two with the Giants, and then you get right into the Astros again.
Get to control your destiny though with those games with the A's. Beat the A's and you'll be in good shape, and then we'll see what they do over the next 10 days. But I wouldn't be shocked if we heard about a trade today. Wouldn't be shocked.
What do you think they could get first? Starter? I'm sure the order's not. They don't care, but you want to get your guys when they're there.
My hunch is, just because of the value of pitching, in particular relief pitching, though, I guess, more so than starting pitching, is that those are the guys going to go the latest.
Let's hope you're right. Let's hope a deal's coming.
Yep, that's why Servais is missing the interview opportunity. Those guys are at their work cantina.
They're holding phones up to their ears. They're feverishly working behind the scenes.
Because, I mean, if Danny David Moore at Edgar's Cantina, you got to have a good reason not to be there.
Yeah. You don't just turn those guys down.
And turn that place down either. That's one of the best places in the ballpark.
All right, that does it for us. Our thanks to John Clayton for joining us on the program. If you missed anything from today's show or any day for that matter, just go to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you missed is waiting for you right there, including my conversation with Brett Okamoto from ESPN for Get in the Cage this week. Some interesting news happening in the world of MMA, so we'll be talking to him. That'll be up there for you, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Having a great card this weekend, as always, by the way, so go get out there and check that out. Have a great weekend, everybody. We're going to be back with you on Monday right here with Bob Gross and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role play group? What would...